Hey everybody, welcome back to the MMA Vivisection with me, Zane Simon, and my co-host, as always, Connor Rebush.
That's me.
Yeah, that's you. We are back talking about a decidedly less awesome card. UFC 299 looked great on paper, was great in practice. It's just one of those things where, like, when the UFC really, we've said it 100 times before, but they set their own standards and their own expectations. Mm. You get to see what trying looks like when they really spend time on the matchmaking,
yeah,
and put together big fights. It's like, wow, this is awesome. And then we look at that and you turn from that to Tuivasa Taibura and a card that just feels like the laziest shit in the world.
Yeah. I would, instead of decidedly less awesome, I would go with decidedly dog shit.
Yeah. Just a whole bunch of fights that nobody cares about.
Yeah. And we were just discussing this, of course. That's right, listeners. We don't save all our complaining for the show, if you can.
That's right. We complain all the time.
Yeah, we actually bitch and moan in our free time. And yeah, we were discussing this. Like, it's not that. I think the narrative that they, which I myself have said, I think last week I used the phrase "robbing Peter to pay Paul" about 7,000 times. The narrative that these cards are somehow a necessity because of how much they stack the pay-per-views these days, which, by the way, you still get, like, every third pay-per-view is kind of weak.
Yes, that is still a problem.
Yeah. I think that sort of it suggests that there is, like, a scarcity of good, interesting fighters available, like, on the roster at large.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's the case. I don't think it's, like, the problem with this card is not that there's no deep good fighters on here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, our boy Christian Rodriguez is back. Mm-hmm. That guy's really good, and he's gotten two super impressive wins. Why is he fighting Isaac Dolgarian? It's a matchup that does nothing. It's at best a lateral move, if not a step back from the win that he got in his last fight, which was super impressive. It's that they just don't try to make interesting matchups on these cards.
Yeah.
You will have good fighters, but they just don't. It is purely who's available for cheap.
Yep.
That's how they matchmake the Apex cards, and you can feel that.
Yeah.
There's so many fighters on, even on this dog shit card, that could be in interesting matchups.
A lot of it too has to be said, though, that there are fighters that the promotion is keeping around these days.
Oh, of course, yes.
Just
for Apex filler.
Yeah, that just don't have any obvious role in the promotion other than to make filler fights.
Yeah, that is true too.
Where, like, you know, what are we doing here with OSP right now?
Right.
Like, what? Kennedy and Zetchiku is at least not bad. He's at least a borderline top 15 talent.
Mm-hmm.
OSP has been not relevant since 2017 when he knocked out Corey Anderson and got subbed by Alir Latifi.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was really kind of the last gasp of OSP being a fighter who is in interesting big fights.
Mm-hmm.
And that's 7 years ago. So why, like, you know, I don't want to call for anybody to lose their jobs or anything, but it is just like the promotion trying to maintain market dominance by making sure that they keep every single person that has any kind of skill that they think they can draw on at all under contract. And it doesn't really matter if they make it good fights with these people or not. They just want to have them around.
Yep.
Which, you know, on the one hand, hey, good for the fighters, because I don't know, you know, what guy OSP would be getting. Like, he might be getting his same paycheck or like half that to get stomped by some Russian over in Chechnya. Because that's usually what happens with late career talent, that UFC talent that decides that they still want to keep fighting and can't get into the PFL. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just, I don't know, you know, like, what, you know, what are we doing with, yeah, there's just a lot of fighters on here that have ended up in a position where there's no clear path left forward for them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no real excitement to see them keep going. And so when you match them up on cards, you just kind of, you create fights that just don't have any meaning or interest to them really at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Brian Barberena, he was a fun action fighter at the prime of his career. My interest in seeing Brian Barberena fight anyone at this point right now.
Yep.
It's pretty much zero.
But what about at middleweight in a fight that does nothing for the guy who will almost certainly beat him because he's actually a middleweight? Yeah, does that interest you, Zan? Don't you want to see him move up two weight classes from where he did his most impressive deeds to lose at a time in his career when you know he's shot?
I mean, yeah.
Come on, buddy.
Yeah. When you say it like that, I'm really sold.
Yeah, did just I ever like tell you I am actually Connor Rebush is a pseudonym. My real name is Mick Maynard. Have I ever mentioned that on the show? It's me, Mick. And I don't see what I think you're disrespecting these athletes.
Well, you know, Mick, I have to ask, why is Panny Key and Zod fighting Macy Chasen again?
Demanded it. The fans demanded it. Remember when we did the rematch of Daniel Lacerda and Edgar Chires? Weren't you wondering about the resolution to that Battle of Titans? We gotta rematch these fights.
Gotta play them back.
Yeah, and as Mick Maynard, I definitely did remember that Panny Kizzot and Macy Chasen had fought before. I didn't forget that.
Yeah, it's just
God, you're not joking. They did.
Yeah, they're not. I'm not joking. They fought before. It was a tough finale of all things.
Wow. Well, this is speaking of tough finales, damn, I wish you hadn't brought up OSP already.
Yeah, yeah.
Or Brian Barberena. Talk about a tough finale.
Yeah, it's just up and down this card, there's just talent that it's just kind of, it's like, okay, what, why is this, you know?
Yep.
Why Thiago Moises, pretty decent middle of the road lightweight, not a bad fighter, tricky, good counter fighter, interesting good grappler. Why is he fighting some newcomer who is like super green? And
why is Josh Koulibal fighting a guy coming off the Contender Series with no real UFC fights?
Yeah.
He just lost a fun fight to Lerone Murphy.
Mm-hmm.
And he had three wins before that.
Nah. And it was a good fight against Lerone Murphy. He acquitted himself pretty well in that fight, you know?
Yeah. He's always acquits himself well. It's always, yeah, these cards are a combination of, it's half fighters that only exist to be on these cards. And then all the other fighters who are matched with them, therefore,
because they just
gives a shit about these matchups.
Yeah.
Because let's be honest, this is worse than, it's not like the UFC schedule, aside from the addition of things like the Contender Series, it's not like it's more packed than it was 4 years ago.
No. They have held consistently at 40 to 42 or so events a year.
Yeah.
For the past near decade, I think it was 2014 was the year that they did like 47 events or something.
Yeah.
And then they had to even cancel two or three of them. They were doing like two a week or two a weekend.
Yeah.
Remember when they were doing that?
Since the ESPN deal, they have quite literally just stopped caring. about putting together quality matchups. They've stopped caring about the entertainment value of the Fight Night cards.
Yep. And it's only become more so over time.
Yep.
They have thoroughly now delineated what it means to have a Fight Night, what it means to have a pay-per-view, and what it means to have an Apex Fight Night.
And yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So
this, anyway, my friends, is an Apex card, in case you didn't realize.
to drive that point home, our producer has given us some alternate stats for the card, of which there's one fight between ranked fighters. There are three ranked fighters overall, including one woman's bantamweight. So, you know, not the deepest ranking pool to begin with. Mm-hmm. There are 13 fighters coming off a loss.
Out of 13 fights.
And 13 fighters who have caught to the UFC off the Contender Series, which is how they're filling everything anymore. Two of which are making their actual UFC debut, and a few tough alumni scattered in, because tough is still a thing, believe it or not.
Yeah, I'm a tough alumni at this point.
Yeah. All right. On that point, though, let's talk about this main event, Tai Tuivasa, Marcin Tybura. And
hey, you know why it's the main event?
Because they're fat.
They're big.
Yeah.
Also, it's actually a well-matched fight on the card.
It is a well-matched fight. It is actually between ranked fighters. And who doesn't love to see sweaty fat guys swanging?
Oh, yeah. My favorite.
Yeah.
As a sweaty fat guy, I demand to be seen.
That's right.
Representation.
Oh, you can't be missed. It's okay.
I walked directly into that. Just look for the largest and yellowest t-shirt you've ever seen. I'll be somewhere inside that.
That's a terrible follow up there, but I'm not gonna.
It's yellow from sweat.
Oh, I was gonna say, in a swimming pool.
Yeah, no, come on. I'm a swimmer, Zane. You got to know that. I used to be a lifeguard. I used to teach swim lessons. I do not wear a t-shirt in the pool. I let it all hang out. Tai Tuivasa, Marcin Tybura. Heavyweights, main eventing an Apex card. Who would have thunk?
Yeah, and it's a well-matched fight, like you said, but it's also a well-matched fight that just feels like the potential for it to be a really horrible fight is just right there, you know?
Yeah.
Well matched can prove something for either fighter, but
what I'll it say might. This. I doubt it will be truly horrible, because it's a pretty straightforward two true outcome kind of deal, as I see
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And in order to get to his outcome, Marcin Tybura will almost certainly get thwacked in the face by Tai Tuivasa a lot.
Yes, there will be a moment, at least just like 1 minute into this fight, where Marcin Tybura is on skates and is about to get knocked out. And whether he gets knocked out or not will likely determine whether he wins the fight or not.
Yeah, I mean, you know, say what you will about him. Marcin Tybura is always game. He's certainly capable of having grimy, ugly, boring fights, but he's always game. He always gives everyone a hard fight. And then Tai Tuivasa's fights, win or lose, are rarely boring.
Yes.
Because either he is knocking the other person out, having a brawl with them where somebody gets knocked out, or he's getting absolutely squished on the ground so badly that it's mercifully quick.
Yeah, he is a fighter who, in the worst moments, he will not resist the urge to make a catastrophic error exactly. that makes everything worse.
And for that, I thank him. I mean, that's pretty much, we've already described the basic picture of this fight, which is that Tai Tuivasa is a big puncher.
Yeah.
A pretty crude one at that, but a big puncher who does throw combinations. And does not mind taking one to give one.
Mm-hmm.
And Marcin Tybura is a pretty good wrestler by the standards of heavyweight, which is to say a pretty bad wrestler.
Yeah.
Who nonetheless out-wrestles a lot of his opponents.
He's very dogged. He is a rare heavyweight who can scramble. He's not a great wrestler.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But he is a fighter who, if he can get in on you and just keep the fight going, he will win scrambles.
Yeah, he could drag you down on top of him and end up on your back.
Yeah, it is a rare heavyweight backtake artist, in fact.
One of the
things that he was always great at regionally, and it's hard as hell to do it at heavyweight, so you don't always see it in his fights, but he can absolutely just scramble to somebody's back and get a hook in and stay there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's basically it. He's going to Tuivasa's quite possibly going to knock Tybura out. Tybura has his extremely comical way of blocking right hands where he literally sticks his forearm directly in front of the center of his face. He sort of tries to block a right hand like the Three Stooges eye poke defense. Mm-hmm. You know?
What Ronda Rousey spent her life learning from Edmund Tarverdian, he learned from watching a Ronda Rousey DVD.
Yeah. So it'll either be Tuivasa. If it's a striking affair, Tuivasa has a pretty good shot of knocking him out. Still the possibility that he lands a lot of shots and tires himself out because Tybura is dogged, as you said. It's not like he's invulnerable, but if he doesn't get knocked out, he will keep soaking up damage and pushing a pace until his opponent is exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
Or it'll be Tybura riding Tuivasa on the ground like Slim Pickens in Doctor Strangelove.
Yes. Very apt. For the kids out there.
Kids love a Doctor Strangelove reference. I'm going to pick Tybura. Because I don't trust Tuivasa against anybody who can outgrapple him.
Yeah, that's the thing, is it? You know, I watch tape on Tuivasa right now, and I'm just like, not only, I mean, the thing that bugs me about Tuivasa is that I think he knows that something is wrong. He knows he has to be fighting better than he is. I think he's deeply frustrated with where his career is.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem like he knows what any of the right answers are.
Yeah.
You know?
I can tell something's wrong, but I'm not going to change anything.
Yeah. So, like, that fight he had with Alexander Volkov, you know, like, you can see that Tuivasa is, like, you know, trying to get himself into better shape and stuff.
Always the MMA fighter's answer, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You get in better shape, and sometimes you adjust your game plan. Like, sometimes Tuivasa will come in and be low kick man. But when it comes to actually like expanding your skill set, that is always the last and rarest form of adaptation for a fight.
You know, it's sad too, because a lot of these, you know, big chonking South Pacific heavyweights.
Heckin heavyweights.
These heckin big chonking South Pacific heavyweights idolize Mark Hunt. Yep. Rightfully so, but they
none of them learn like Mark Hunt.
Yeah, like Mark Hunt, for you know, you could actually go back to an era where Mark Hunt was in shape and it is terrifying.
Yeah,
you know, there is a point where Mark Hunt was in really good shape, and you watch that footage, you're like, oh my god, if only this man had learned to kickbox 10 years earlier than he did, instead of picking it up on a whim at like 23 and just going out and suddenly being a top level competitive kickboxer.
Mm-hmm.
But you watch like late career successful in the UFC Mark Hunt.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like he's in shape. It's like being in shape was the secret sauce.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a very there's a very deft technician in there.
Yep.
Who would fight a limited game with a really deft technical skill set that just required a lot of timing and a lot of patience and a lot of ring craft. And
also, you can go back to a period of Mark Hunt's MMA career where he was at least as bad as Tai Tuivasa on the ground,
if not
worse.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that another thing that he actually like learned to do over time. That was a major reason why he got better. He learned to stop takedowns and he learned to scramble.
Yep. And yeah, it just it feels like so many of these heavyweights out there that are trying to be that same guy just see the punch hard part.
Yeah.
And not the other stuff.
Yeah. No, Mark Hunt had some slick in him.
He always used to do that little sort of ambling back and forth to like step off uppercut where it seemed like he was moving in through molasses. And then suddenly the uppercut would come at like three times the speed. Beautiful sneaky punch.
I think she had decent boxing defense for MMA. Like,
yeah. Really just a great fighter.
Yep.
So yeah, you know, I watch you watch Tuivasa against Volkov, and you see a very determined, very I know I need to get this one looking Tuivasa, but he just gets eaten up by Volkov's jab, which he doesn't know how to deal with, and he doesn't have any range tools himself to draw on other than a few low kicks. And he really quickly is just back to having to crash the pocket and swing hooks. And that is his only form of offense.
Yep. Yeah, Mark Hunt never got eaten up by the jab in an MMA fight.
No.
Like that, at the very least, you should know how to catch a jab.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't. Tai Tuivasa has had how many UFC fights at this point? Like up maybe 10?
He has had 1, 2.
And his jab defense is not that much better than the jab defense Gazeev showed against Rozenstruik.
14.
14 UFC fights, and he's only marginally better than Gazeev.
Yeah.
Whose first name I have already forgotten.
Shamil, I think.
Yeah, something like that. He's only marginally better than him at dealing with jabs.
Well, yeah.
What's going on? Who's training this man? Like, what's the deal?
Yeah.
It can't even all be Tuivasa's fault. Like, somebody is failing him in the gym.
Yeah. He's at AKA Thailand.
And
he's just bouncing around. It looks like he's just bouncing around a whole bunch of different Thailand-based camps.
Well, that might be part of it.
Yeah. He's at Bang Tao. He's registered with Bang Tao Muay Thai, Tiger Muay Thai, AKA Thailand, and TK MMA and Fitness.
Yeah, but that is Tai Tuivasa's problem. There are just vast technical gaps in his game that he has just made essentially zero progress in shoring up.
Yep. And so, on the flip side, it's really hard. You know, at the same time, then I go watch Marcin Tybura, and I still see this guy who, if you don't bring a messy fight to him, we'll just kind of bounce around at range with his forearm right in the middle of his eye line. And like, you know, jab. He has that Neil Magny jab almost, you know, that like doubles at the elbow where you're like, except he doesn't have reach compared to his opposition.
Yeah.
So he's just got this like janky,
the bendo jab.
Yeah, toss an arm out there, pawing kind of jab. And so, yeah, if somebody doesn't force a hard scramble out of him, he just goes out there and works this really non-threatening, defensively irresponsible kickboxing game. And he'll do it for minute after minute after minute. There's no urgency to it.
Would be funny if this was a fight where Tuivasa just beat him with low kicks.
It would certainly be something he could do. Mm-hmm. You know, if Tai Tuivasa could just go out there and not go crazy mm-hmm. and kick Tibora.
Yeah, and he has a chance of beating him with pot shots because
yeah, just
like Tibora is going to be messing him up with his strikes all day.
Exactly. Easily. Just plug him with a one overhand and a couple low kicks every minute. And yeah, maybe Tibora will work a little harder than you, but he won't hit as hard.
Mm-hmm.
It just feels like there's always going to be a de-evolution point for Tuivasa where things get a little messy because he will crash the pocket.
Well, he gasses too. I mean,
yeah,
another huge reason Tibora gets so many wins is that he's got good stamina.
Yeah, so I guess I have to chase your pick and pick Tibora too. But yeah, I mean, all Tuivasa has to do is like be a little patient and collected and trust that you hit way harder than this guy. Because
mm-hmm.
if you do that, Tibora won't. He can't really force an easy wrestling grappling match. That doesn't, you know, that happens when his opponents tend to overswing and over aggressively come after him,
mm-hmm.
and then he can out scramble them in the mess.
Mm-hmm.
But it does, like Tai Tuivasa is not a fighter to not get messy.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Once again, this is, given the matchmaking on the rest of the card, this is the right choice for a main event.
Yeah.
This is a decently matched fight with some relevance in its division.
Yep.
So, you know, it's just that it's a heavyweight fight at the tail end of a bunch of dog shit that makes it feel so, like, I don't know. I just feel crestfallen talking
about
it. It makes me sad.
It's just not, I mean, even as a ranked heavyweight fight, it's not actually relevant because we have seen so many of the flaws that both these fighters have.
That's true.
And they're not getting corrected.
Doesn't really move anyone anywhere.
Yeah. Like Tibora, you know, he has put in work. He has gotten better. Most of that, though, is just getting a more natural feel for being in the octagon.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like he has suddenly made some technical leap. His striking is a little better than it used to be.
He does a good amount of leaping.
Yeah.
But none of it very technical.
And Tuivasa just doesn't even seem like he's gotten the cage comfort yet. Where you're like, oh yeah, you can go out there and fight hard for round after round and be controlled and not have everything fall apart the moment something starts going wrong.
Yep.
So... yeah, I gotta pick.
It's true. The only way this matchup creates any movement for either of these guys' careers is if one of them has successfully improved.
Yeah,
and we get to see that. And that's not due to the matchmaking itself, really.
No. Tuivasa opened at -113. He's currently a -115. Tibora opened at +102. He's currently a +104. Yeah, I don't honestly see any good reason that either man should be favored. It's close to even, so I'm not going to argue with the odds. But like, I guess I would say Tibora seems like a more natural favorite here to me because we just see Tibora, or we just see Tuivasa melt down on his own so often.
Yeah.
All right, that brings us to a welterweight bout. Brian Battle, Angelusa. And yeah, I don't, you know, this is another, this is all right. An all right booked fight. Lusa seems like he's really just deep in the hoofed morass, in the dangerous place that fighters fighting under the Killcliff banner and under Hoof's tutelage can get caught up, which is where he is really trying hard to teach somebody how to be a good technical fighter with basics. But by stripping somebody way down and sticking them with a lot of basic techniques hasn't necessarily left them with a lot on their game to work with. And Lusa, you know, he's a fighter who he kind of vacillates between being really disengaged or totally all the way in a brawl engaged and hasn't quite found that middle ground where he could just fight a reasonable fight for a whole round. You know,
Mosa at least has the excuse of still being in the gaining experience stage of his career.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was saying. He's in the middle of the hoofed morass where it's just like, okay, you have been given a very strict system to work in, and it's going to take a while for you to adapt to that. And I think he's kind of been in it. He's probably been in it since he got started fighting in the U.S. So probably like 2018, which means he's been in there a while now. But,
That's only seven fights worth of experience. I mean,
yeah, 6 years, seven fights. It's just like that fight against Reese McKee was basically like, you are either absolutely going full bore on this man and tuning him up and just absolutely dominating him however you want, or your foot is way off the gas and you are letting Reese McKee back into it at any time, you know? And he still hasn't found that, just like, okay, I can control this fight. I can just lean on the technique that I've learned and and trust myself that it will carry me. It's either like, okay, well, I'm either absolutely putting physical domination on you or I'm collecting myself.
Yeah.
And then on the flip side, we've got Brian Battle, who is still, you know, still very much seems like a fighter who just... He is figuring out more how to control a fight. That AJ Fletcher fight, he fought with a lot of just front kicks to maintain distance and force Fletcher to have to crash in on him. But when a fighter does crash in on him, it's still a bit of the whatever fight you bring to me, I will take.
Yeah.
He's got a very, like, there's a very Alex Caceres part of Brian Battle without the slickness, where, you know, Caceres can have, like, if you want to have a range fight with Alex Caceres, it suddenly feels like, oh, this is the fight Alex Caceres should be having with a lot of people and can do really well at. Brian Battle, that fight still doesn't really exist. There's no version of a fight for Brian Battle where you're like, oh, this is the fight you should be having and you look really good here. It's just, he is learning. He may be learning to have that fight. Like I say, the front kicks were a nice thing, and he can throw a solid 1-2 and all that, but it's all still just sort of whenever Fletcher, you know, when Gabe Green just sort of ran it, Battle, and Battle was like, okay, we're in a firefight, I'll answer back. And Fletcher had surprising success just kind of crashing in on Battle, and Battle was able to reverse it and fight his way through it and scramble through it. But whenever he did close that gap, Fletcher got to have the fight he needed.
Yeah.
At least for a moment. And what does that mean for this Angelusa bout? I'm not entirely sure how it's going to shake out, because to me, that kind of says when Lusa is blitzing forward and just going full throttle, he'll get to have a lot of success. And when he's not, and even when doing that, Brian Battle might come up with answers. He's not bad at coming up with answers in a hard fight.
I would not call him a sophisticated counterpuncher.
Yeah, no.
But he's a gutsy counterpuncher.
Yeah, his first instinct that he learned in the early stages of his career is, I will be comfortable in the fire. Yeah. You know? I will find a way to fight through the chaos. And it's really only
his ground and sling a really hard shot at your chin.
Yeah. So he might even have moments of good success with against Lusa just crashing in on him.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is then, though, when Lusa doesn't do that, does the fight just become static?
Yeah, sort of just peter out.
Where Battle is like, oh, I don't really have an A game to go for here at range. And Lusa is in the, well, I'm trying to get myself worked back up to crash in again and go bananas on you. How to pick between that? I guess I feel like I should pick Battle because he's a lot bigger.
Yeah,
he's got 3 inches of height and some reach,
which I think was a significant element in Losa's the surprising amount of difficulty he had with Race McKee.
Yeah, especially late.
Yep. He was just clearly uncomfortable. I mean, Losa is definitely in the Gilbert Burns camp of Henry Hooft students.
Yeah.
He's just a little more awkward, and he can settle into a fight and find a kind of flow, but he's prone to doing the right things, not necessarily in the right way.
Yeah, he's very much just sort of picking when he's going to go after it and going after it, and whatever his opponent is doing, they can meet him right there and find him there to be hit, find him there to be countered, whatever it is, because he's just made a decision that he's going to fight now, and he doesn't really care what they're going to do.
What we call a rote fighter, not necessarily using all the Henry Hooft techniques, but not necessarily connecting them in the way that you should. Like, okay, I've landed this. That means I can land this. Okay, this missed, but it missed because he reacted in this way. That creates an opening for this.
Yeah.
You know, like the sort of the flow of a good boxing or kickboxing game. Like I said, he can access it, but the fight kind of has to get hairy, I think, before he gets there. And then there's the possibility of him getting tired.
Yeah. So, you know, Battle is comfortable in that kind of fight.
Yeah, for sure.
It's where he might get overwhelmed by Losa, but... Or you might let Losa walk him to the cage, tie him up, take him down even. But these are all spots that Battle has been pretty good about coming back from and getting sweeps and counters, getting up to his feet, those kinds of things. It's really only Renat Fakhretdinov who was able to control and make Battle pay for that all the way through. And then if it's going to be back out at distance, like Battle doesn't have a slick game out there, but at least in his last fight against Fletcher, he showed an understanding and willingness to create offense there that I don't see out of Losa yet. Like Losa just kind of goes totally negative when he's out in open space. So yeah, I got to pick Battle to be more comfortable in all areas of like distance and positions that the fight could go, even if he's not always got the momentum and got the initiative. Where Losa, I feel like there are bigger gaps where this fight can end up easily in spots where he just won't be doing anything. So,
yeah, I'm inclined to agree with that.
Yeah.
I think, my initial impulse was to pick Losa just on the idea that I have seen Losa put together some pretty fluid striking sequences.
Oh yeah. I mean, and that training he's getting when he accesses it and when he guesses right and when he picks the right moment, it's like Gilbert Burns is a great, is a great comparison where it's like,
yep.
When Gilbert Burns, when he finds the right moment to throw the right thing, you're like, damn, that worked really well. That looked great. Yeah.
20 feels comfortable.
Yeah.
And I really do think a big part of Losa, because Losa should have run through Reese McKee. Like,
yes. And when it was clicking, he was dominating.
Absolutely.
Reese McKee.
But I think it was much harder for him to find spots of comfort because of the range. Like it almost had not even almost, it very much had the feeling of the way that people lose to Neil Magny.
Mm-hmm.
Like the way that we know the Leech is a much better boxer than Neil Magny, but he was so uncomfortable with Neil Magny's frame that he just, like, every time he threw, he overcommitted almost on purpose so that he could crash into the clinch and feel safe.
Yeah.
That was how Losa's wrestling felt against Mickey. And he missed some really sloppy shots as a result of that, of just like lunging in from way too far out.
Yep.
And yeah, I think the size had a lot to do with that. And as a guy who doesn't really look very smooth unless he's comfortable, going against just a much bigger guy who hits really hard is going to be a tough spot to try to find that comfort. Yep. Like I said, my instinct was, because like Battle is hittable.
Yep.
He's tall. That also means he's vulnerable. Like, his chin is right there. His defense is not good. And when Los is clicking, he should be able to just rack up the strike count on him. But I think he just might have a hard time getting into a flow against Battle.
Yeah, I can, you know, I mean, we saw against Munir Lazez a great fight. But Lazez was able to just put some offense out in front of Losa a lot early in that fight, out at distance, that kept Losa from getting into the fight he wanted for long stretches.
Yeah.
And it was enough for Losa to lose that one. And I can easily see Battle just,
yeah,
like I say, that front kick he was hitting with Fletcher with, mm-hmm, that worked really well for him. And I can see him leaning on something like that here and making Losa hesitate a bunch before he can crash in and start making something happen, where both guys are going to have some success. And then you're looking at, well, you know, if both guys are having success in the pocket and Losa's having no success outside, it's more likely to be a fight Battle win.
Yeah. In fact, the Lozes fight was almost sort of tipped the scale, where Lezez was getting so many shots in against Losa that Losa actually sort of, sometimes you get comfortable because you just stop giving a shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're like, okay, I'm getting hit. And then like you go through like a round and a half of that and you're like, you know what? He hasn't like knocked me out or hurt me. He's just hitting me and it's not that bad. It doesn't really hurt. It just kind of put stars in my eyes every third second.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to go at him. I actually feel like that was one of the more fluid Losa striking performances, because it was just such a scrap all the time.
Yep.
It was the size and slow output of Reese McKee that seemed to make it really hard for Losa to actually get into the fight.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, I don't have a huge amount of faith in Battle.
No.
If Losa does get comfortable, if he's done the right amount of sparring with big, tall training partners, if he's got a good game plan, Battle is kind of always just a guy who sort of finds it on the night.
Yep. He's very much a dude who is just going out there to have a fight, and whatever happens in that fight, he will be there for it.
I think there's a lot of room for Losa to win this. This, by the way, also a pretty well-matched fight.
Yeah.
This is, I guess, the logical co-main event to this card.
Battle opened at minus 127, is currently down at minus 179. Losa opened at plus 115, is currently at plus 160.
Yeah, I'm picking Battle, by the way, as well.
Yeah.
I think I made that clear, but I didn't say it explicitly.
Yeah. All right. That brings us to a light heavyweight fight. Kennedy Nzechukwu against Ovince St. Preux.
Boy, does it.
And yeah, I mean, it's your pick, so just say it and then we'll move on.
Nzechukwu.
Yeah, Nzechukwu. Like, OSP has always been incredibly low output, and a fighter who leans on toughness and power to hang in rounds and just find a moment to change the fight.
Yeah, there was a time when this guy was simply tough enough and big and strong and fast enough that he was able to get completely out-wrestled by Glover Teixeira and still keep the fight really competitive.
Yeah, I mean, he was for a while one of John Jones' toughest title fights.
And even that, I would say, was sort of after his best years were gone.
And it was just literally because he was so big and strong that it took a long while for Jones to feel comfortable, tying up with OSP.
Yeah, but being able to rely on those youthful athletic traits was an absolute necessity to OSP's success.
Yeah,
like in the Teixeira fight, for example, he gets taken down constantly, and he just stands up.
Yeah.
And every time they're at range, he hits Teixeira with a massive kick to the body or threatens to shatter his forearm, making him block a devastating kick upstairs. He was potent, and that was the only thing that kept him going. And now that potency is gone and the durability is gone,
then he just stands there and waits to get hit.
It just turns out that his complete failure to ever develop a meaningful process means that, yeah, he just stands around waiting to get hit.
Yeah. It really is just, I mean, you know what? All credit to Felipe Lins, because there's still some people out there who get in there with OSP and get a little awed by his size and physicality.
Mm-hmm. Lin's like, I don't care, I'm handsome now.
Yeah. And Lin's just went out there and was like, what if I just run through you? What if I just stomp you for every second?
What if I, noted power puncher Felipe Lins, force you to taste my might?
And he just absolutely stomped OSP into the ground.
Yeah.
Not even a question, not even a moment of competitive. And the thing was, is it wasn't even there's one shot that Lin's landed that put OSP on skates early. And he then had to reconfigure and get his bearings and he just couldn't or something. No, he just got pushed onto the back foot and got so overwhelmed by offense that he never had a chance to even fight.
Yeah, Lins may as well have slapped him unconscious. That's how much he disrespected him with that performance, and it was the move.
Yeah,
you don't respecting this version of OSP is the only way to have a competitive fight with him.
Yep.
Whereas you make Mikhail Oleksijuk.
Yeah.
Rematch that fight right now. Oleksijuk's winning.
Yeah, no question.
OSP, so many of OSP's wins rely on him just tanking a shitload of damage and not going out. That he now appears to have lost even that. So
yeah, and Zetchiku has the actual size to just be, also not overwhelmed by OSP at all.
Yep.
He's bigger, so that avenue's gone. So yeah, it's just he's just picking Zetchiku. And even if he has a slow start, OSP is not going to make him pay for that. And all Nzechukwu ever has to do is survive a slow first round before he starts really clicking with his pressure and aggression. So
yeah, he really shouldn't have a slow start, though. I mean,
no, he should just go out and he should just look at Felipe Lins and be like, yeah, I can do that.
Yep,
I can go put a hand on you and wang hooks and uppercuts at you until you fold.
Yep, you can out wrestle OSP. I mean,
yeah,
Zetchiku is a fairly well rounded big man. He could basically win this however he wants as long as he gets on the gas.
Yep, Zetchiku opened at -366. He's currently at -535. OSP opened at +304. He's currently at +417. He was up as high as +460 recently, but has dropped back down a little. If somebody making a large chance bet on OSP, that is, I'm no gambling man, but I would not do anything that involved putting money on an OSP victory.
A gambling man, Zane. You're a coward.
You could do over 1.5 rounds if you really wanted to be shock, you know, like make a chance, because it took OSP, you know, 2 minutes and 31 seconds into round two to lose to Tanner Boser, and 3 minutes and 37 seconds into round two to lose to Jamal Hill. And he, you know, drug Ben Rothwell and Shogun Hua to split decisions. Took him, you know, he has that ability. 2 minutes and 31 seconds to lose to Nikita Krylov. So you want to do the over on 1.5 rounds? Maybe there's something there, because OSP is so negative in how he fights.
Can be a slow starter.
Against somebody who can be, but betting on OSP?
Definitely.
All right, woman's bantamweight fight, Pani Khienzad, Macy Chasen. And, yeah, I mean, so Macy Chasen has a couple of issues that I think will never go away. Most of which is actually she's a bully.
Yeah.
I think there's some severe confidence issues that she has, that she is constantly building herself with. Everything that's successful for her builds her confidence and like keeps her going. And if the fight, but that can all be taken from her in an instant.
Yep.
Like if in the middle of that success, she gets hurt, Macy Chasen, like you always know when Macy Chasen has been hurt.
Yeah, she crumbles.
She crumbles really in a hurry. And some of that, maybe there's some natural durability lack there as well.
Could be. Yeah, I was thinking of that bizarre finish loss to Aldana.
Mm-hmm. But like, you know.
But I got to think that even that was like, there's probably a fighter who could take that exact shot. It would have the same effect on their liver and they would be like, oh shit. And like, fall on top of the opponent instead of like turning away and instantly turtling, giving the opponent who's on their back time to stand up and seal the finish. Like just flop on top of her and then you can recover.
Yeah. Like she was bossing Raquel Pennington around for the first round of their fight.
Yeah.
And then Pennington just was like, okay, I'm just going to sit down on some bigger shots and start taking the fight to you more. And Chasen just, and this is Raquel Pennington. Like, this is not a heavy hitter.
Yeah.
You know?
I think she just wilts unless she is
entirely in control.
Yeah, which is why she tends to be such an assertive, like, pace fighter when she's
running
away. She does not want the opponent to get any initiative at all.
Yeah. And fortunately for her, Pani Khienzad is a fighter who has insane amounts of trouble creating initiative.
Yeah.
Like she at her best wants to be a back foot out fighter who fights behind her jab, her cross, and her low kick. And that is what she wants to do, is be out at distance, just getting to work behind her a few technical, well-thrown strikes. And she's got good technique on those strikes. She knows how to throw and make her own thing work. So if you're 2 foot slow to track her down, or you can't help having a kickboxing match with her, she can win some good fights. But any amount of pace and pressure also just tends to put Pani Khienzad either against the cage or on her back, where she does not work hard enough to escape.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw this fight before, and Chasen just chased her down all the time and put her against the cage and put her on her back and roughed her up. And I am going to pick that to happen again, because Chasen looked honestly like pretty good doing that against Irene Aldana.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for the first two and a half rounds of that fight, 2 rounds and 2 minutes, Macy Chasen just stayed aggressive and stayed on Aldana and was winning the fight. So I don't think that that Panic Kian Zod has that like comeback KO ability even against somebody with as many durability and confidence issues as Jason has. She certainly didn't the first time. So
yeah, I really got nothing to add. That's pretty much exactly how I see the fight. A rematch that we absolutely needed to see.
Yeah. Really had to have this one again. Chasen is a decided favorite. Opened at minus 165. Currently minus 218. Kian Zod opened at plus 147. It's currently plus 192. All right. That brings us to... Actually, you know what? I think I maybe went out of order on these. So...
No, I think you're right. You've been right so far.
Have I? Because the Tapology has a different...
Oh, you're right. Yeah, you're right. You screwed up.
I did.
Terrible mistake.
So let's go to the featherweight. I'll close Twitter. Or not Twitter, but Wikipedia. Because I always get caught on there like an old man.
I know it's hard for you.
It is. It is. It's been baked into my brain.
You just hate the Tapology. It's like... all the fighters have pages instead of just half of them or less, given that this is an Apex card.
It's just what it really literally is. I just figured it out, honestly.
Yeah.
We started doing this show before Tapology existed.
Did we?
Yeah. I think so.
Oh, when did Tapology start?
Let's see. Internet, I'm gonna take a little segue.
Do the Internet Archive.
Archive topology.com. Let's see. Internet Archive. Search archived websites.
What's the earliest archived Tapology.com?
Oh, okay, maybe not. Let's see. Tapology.
The first Google Trends hit for the term Tapology is from September 2008.
Yeah. So.
And then 2010, it really starts to tick upwards. I think you're wrong, Zane.
I think I might be wrong. But it certainly was not like notable at all when we started doing.
Certainly this. People used to use the Sherdog Fight Finder more than Tapology.
I would use Wiki over Sherdog Fight Finder because that Sherdog.
It had a worse user experience than Tapology.
Yeah.
And now it's nigh impossible to use as it takes forever to load because of all the goddamn ads.
Let's see. Okay. Tapology.com. There's a 2006 instance snapshot. Let me see what that is. That's just is parked free courtesy of GoDaddy. That was literally somebody just sitting on the domain.
Our producer says the website was founded in 2010.
Okay. That makes sense. So it has been around just a few years before we got going, but it was not nearly so robust.
So the real answer as to why you insist on using Wikipedia
is just I'm old.
You are a clown ass.
Yes, I am a clown ass.
You're a boomer.
Yeah.
You are at any moment that you go outside, which I know isn't often, but at any moment that you go outside, you are seconds away from getting brutally mocked by a black teen. That's just, they'd be like, what are those? And then you run back inside.
Okay. I was not sure where you're going with that, but I, you know what? Fine. Let's move on.
Have you ever been roasted by a black teenager? Bro, they're so good at it.
Okay, we are moving on. We are moving right along here.
I don't know why you're so sensitive about this. You're the guy with the racist dog.
My dog has not had a race-related issue for at least 8 months.
She's reformed.
Yeah. All right. Featherweight bout, Christian Rodriguez, Isaac Bulgarian.
Again, don't understand the matchmaking, which is not to say that, like, there's nothing interesting in this matchup, but, like, to me, at least, Christian Rodriguez has earned a bit of prominence. He's earned an opportunity to get some upwards movement.
Yeah, I mean, the big thing, I guess the big reason he wouldn't be getting that is because he can't make weight. And he, so he is in the doghouse for.
Maybe that's it.
He missed weight against Cameron Simon by 5 pounds.
Yeah, but don't punish me for that.
I know.
You know, so what, you're going to, if you're mad at him for that, then, like, I don't know, you cut him or you make him move up in weight. You're just going to put him in a matchup that sucks.
They did make him move up in weight. This is his first fight at 145 after trying to go down to bantamweight twice and failing to make weight both times.
Yeah. So why not just, I don't know. And maybe it would be too much to give him a tough featherweight fight for his debut or something. I don't know. But the thing is,
He's one of your boys and you don't like this.
It's not just that. Like, he absolutely smushed Raul Rosas, who is still getting significantly more prominent bookings.
Yeah.
And then he went in there against Cameron Simon and missed weight or no. Anybody watching that fight would say that was a very impressive performance.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's not like my boy in the way that, like, TJ Brown is.
Yeah,
he's my boy, and I'm like, this guy is like Nathaniel Wood good.
Mm.
You know, this guy's really a very shockingly skilled and mature fighter. I think that's, like, self-evident. So I don't know. The thing is, given that this is his featherweight debut in the UFC.
Well, it's his featherweight re-debut. He started at featherweight against Jonathan Pierce and lost that fight.
Oh, I totally forgot about that fight.
And then he's fought but twice.
Definitely instructive because you know, the threat of wrestling. That is Bulgarian's game.
Yep.
That is one of the reasons you do not. That's the one of the main reasons to go down in weight in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we should have thought of this more when we talked about Rodriguez's game, his wrestling and grappling improvements against Rosas.
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, I think pretty clearly he did shore up his wrestling and grappling technique, and his instincts on the ground got much better. But also, we were surprised by that because he'd been out wrestled previously, recall?
Yeah.
And maybe the fact that that was at featherweight had something to do with that.
Yeah, I mean, it very, very likely. I think a big thing for me still with Rodriguez, as much as I like his style and his game and the way he puts everything together, is that he's not very fast at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so it especially behooves him to be the stronger guy. You know?
Yeah.
And yeah, I worry. I would worry about him at featherweight because, you know, at 5'7" with a 71-inch reach, there's nothing physically about him. It's the same size as Dulgarian, as it happens, so neither man will have a huge size advantage here. But it's not a size that screams, oh, this guy is too big for bantamweight.
Yeah.
But he can't seem to make the weight. And yeah.
Whether that's an issue of discipline or the fact that some people are just not built.
Yeah.
To cut the weight easily. Might just have heavy bones. Who knows?
Yep. Either way, I do wonder how effective his game can be in a division where he is going to just generally be a small fighter.
Yeah.
And
because the thing in the Pierce fight is that I think speed is probably part of it. I think it combines with the fact that he's just not a very big featherweight.
Mm-hmm.
Because against Pierce, his answers to the wrestling were not bad, actually. But perhaps a lack of foot speed allowed Pierce to basically get into a wrestling situation whenever he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And then once he was there, Rodriguez could do all the solid defensive wrestling he wanted. Pierce was just stronger than him.
Yeah.
and dogged, and you know,
that was a late notice replacement for Rodriguez. Yeah. He was subbing in for who was it that was supposed to have that fight? It was supposed to be against Austin Lingo against Pierce, and Lingo got injured. So yeah, there was short notice, but it is a thing that I think honestly might be a big problem for Rodriguez, especially in this fight. Honestly, like I just,
yeah,
Dolgarian to me, he like I say, he's the same size as Rodriguez, but he's got a much more like, I see a lot more Frankie Edgar potential in him. Or who was the lightweight who basically just quit on the UFC because they wouldn't pay him enough or get him good enough fights? He used to, the whole thing about being the best fisherman in the UFC was his thing.
Gregor Gillespie.
Yeah. I see, you know, I can see a lot of Gregor Gillespie and Dolgarian where it's like, yeah, you might be a small guy, but all the natural athletic strength and speed gifts are there to make being a small guy against bigger competition work.
Mm-hmm. Which, yeah. I mean, I'm watching the Pierce fight now to refresh my memory. And to be honest, like, Rodriguez is like first and even second layer takedown defense is pretty solid, even up a weight class.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a really well-schooled fighter. Just,
yeah. Part of the issue is that, yeah, he's in there against a guy who is able to continually get in. And when he can turn that into like an extended wrestling exchange, he can just kind of drag him around until something actually gets him down to the ground.
Yep.
The other thing is, and I think he has probably improved this, that his striking doesn't flow as well because of the takedown threat.
Mm-hmm.
So really, I think a lot of this, how this matchup plays out, it feels like it will come down to just how successful Dolgarian's wrestling is in the first round.
Yeah.
Because if he's able to stack enough layers of takedown attack on Rodriguez, then it's possible Rodriguez won't, even if he can adapt to then stuff future takedowns, his striking might not click the way it should.
Yeah.
I don't know, though. I do really think that Rodriguez got much better. I think he already was in improved form in the Rosas fight, made really, really good decisions throughout, was very patient. Like, he really looked like a veteran just schooling.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought he looked phenomenal against Cameron Simon. Like, his counterpunching was incredible. He had a guy in there who had absolutely zero quit in him, was testing him all the way, and he dominated the fight.
Yeah, no, I like Rodriguez a lot too. I think he's just a really thoughtful, well-schooled fighter who knows all the stuff. It's just, I say the problem is that he's not very big for, even as a bantamweight, he's not huge. Like 5'7" and 71 inches reach, there are plenty of flyweights on that scale.
Yep.
And he is not fast. And you can be technical enough to make up for a lack of speed.
For sure, yeah.
And I think he is. I think that's what was showed up in the Rosas and the Simon fights.
Yeah. Maybe Nathaniel Wood isn't as good a comparison as a mutual boy of ours, Jack Shore.
Yeah, that would be a really good comparison, Jack Shore.
Who also just kind of lacks that elite athleticism.
Yeah, and Jack Shore has been great in a lot of fights and then ran into Ricky Simone, who was just like, I'm sorry, I'm just more athletic than you. Like, you can make the right decision as many times as you want,
mm-hmm.
and I will just be faster and stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I think I got to pick Dolgarian here just because I really think that his wrestling and his top game are special. Like, I absolutely loved the way that he busted up Francis Marshall on the ground mm-hmm. after getting him down.
Yep.
You know, this seems like a guy who not only is he a good wrestler, but he is a wrestler who has prioritized training in the ways that that open up his wrestling game.
Yep.
You know, it's not just like, oh, I'm a wrestler who's trying to learn to strike, and so I've got this janky, uncomfortable overhand striking game that kind of ties into my wrestling, and then I get you to the mat, and I just kind of hold positions and do mat returns because that's what I'm used to. I'm a wrestler who finds ways to get in on shots and create multiple opportunities, and when I get on top, get into half guard and find moves that, even from full guard, create lots of damage and persistent pressure that force you to react in ways that are bad for you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He's very overwhelming.
Yeah. So yeah. I'm going to pick that because I just think that Rodriguez can survive, and I think he can make this fight hard, but I think he's just always going to be letting Dolgarian in on a shot.
Yeah. So. I see that. I think that sounds like a sensible call. I'm still going to pick Rodriguez. One thing I will point out is that obviously a biased pick because I like the guy.
Yeah.
One thing I will point out, though, is that Dolgarian, very inexperienced.
Yeah.
Has never had a fight go outside the first round.
No. And that is still a worry. And
it speak to how overwhelming he is.
Yeah.
He gets people down and is so dominant in top position that he finishes them on the ground in the first round.
Yeah, I could easily be getting tracked into a who was it that has been my trap fighter that I've had to really get off the train with? It wasn't Sungwoo Choi he lost to. It was the other Korean fighter. Who's the other big Korean fighter in the featherweight division? Or Kyle Nelson. Who lost? He lost to Kyle Nelson.
Yeah, find it that way.
That's the easier.
I can't help you with this one.
I could easily be getting trapped into the Blake Builder situation here with Dolgarian, where it's like
big Korean fighter. Oh, Builder lost to a big Korean fighter.
Yeah,
Builder lost. I don't think he's Korean.
No. Lost to a big Korean.
Yeah.
But Builder also is a fighter. Yo, I looked at him and I look at him coming out. I'm like, oh yeah, here's a lot of physical tools, a lot of physicality, a ability to be a punishing fighter. And then it was just like, you see him in the UFC against good opposition. It's like, oh, there's no depth here.
And that Kyle Nelson fight. Ironically, it took Nelson like an entire career to get to the point where he could fight it like that.
Yeah.
Rodriguez already fights that way. He does not have Nelson's athleticism.
That's still
a factor. But that is very much the kind of fight that if Dolgarian is at all susceptible to that Rodriguez could win. Like,
yeah.
Just stuff the takedowns, put pressure on you.
Yeah. If there's a moment in this fight where Dolgarian's takedowns just stop working, he's in a lot of trouble.
That's what I mean. Like, and even perhaps saying the first round will tell the whole story is not true, just because I don't yet know. I suspect looking at Dolgarian, he's not gonna like instantly fall apart because first of all, like wrestling is always a great skill to have when you get tired. I just think gassing affects dominant wrestlers less than it does most other core styles.
Yeah. I see a lot of Gregor Gillespie and Isaac Dolgarian. Gillespie, he was great at just fighting through like the point that he's exhausted to make
wrestlers. Maybe it's not even just the skill set. It's that wrestling as a sport, if you have a wrestling background, it's hard.
Yeah.
Like the training wrestlers go through is a huge part of what makes them such effective MMA fighters. Cause like you will develop mental toughness or you will quit wrestling.
It is some very serious traditional Kung Fu montage shit.
Absolutely.
Where it's, you know, the guy like just carrying buckets of water up, like running up a hill with buckets of water for like, you know, a month straight. And that's the only training he gets to do.
Yeah, and it prepares you. You will spend years just getting used to how horrible you feel when you're cutting huge amounts of weight.
Yeah.
Because, like, that's a big part of the weight-cutting culture in MMA. It's because of the prevalence of wrestling, I think.
Yeah.
Wrestlers understand how useful a big weight cut can be.
It really is a shame that Gillespie just understood the UFC inherently.
I know.
Because he was a lot of fun to watch.
He was a very good fighter. And, it's Dolgarian, too. These are not boring wrestlers.
No.
These guys crush you with their wrestling.
Gillespie was a ton of fun to watch, but he just got it. He understood at some point, really determinedly. He was like, you either give me a top-level fight, a big fight that is, you know, gets me to a title shot where I can make money, or I'm just going to go do other stuff. And he has been doing other stuff ever since.
He clearly still enjoys MMA as a sport, because they were mentioning last week's card that Caitlin Sermonara, Ni Chukagian, does a ton of wrestling training with Gregor Gillespie.
Yeah.
But clearly he's still in the gym. He still enjoys it. It's just like, as a profession, it did no longer seem worth it to him. And I can't say he's wrong for that.
No, he just understood. He understood the dynamic of, like, what this is. And it's just,
I'm here to get used. I'm not here to, no one's expecting me to succeed or going to help me succeed. So fuck it.
Yep.
Anyway, the fact that this is a move up in weight class, and that it is sort of a run back of a style matchup that that Rodriguez lost last time he was at featherweight makes it pretty interesting. But
yeah,
I think there's a reasonable chance that he is smart enough, calm enough, principled enough as a fighter to outlast Dolgarian. And like you said, if at any point Dolgarian's takedowns stop working, it seems very likely that Rodriguez will just take over.
Yeah, because I mean, at that point, that is, especially even if Dolgarian doesn't get tired, if he's never fought past the first round,
Rodriguez just has a really principled boxing game too.
Yeah, like,
he sets up his shots really well. He's a great counter puncher. Like, he's got solid defense.
Yep,
knows how to pressure without overcommitting. I mean, he's got it all.
If Dolgarian gets into deeper water than he's used to without his A game, then I don't expect his game to work anymore.
Yep.
Dolgarian opened at -116. He's currently at -176. And Rodriguez opened at +105, currently at +157. All right. That brings us to our final fight on the main card. Gerald Meerschaert, Brian Barberena. And I don't trust Brian Barberena for anything anymore.
Barberena at middleweight?
Yeah, this just feels like a last gasp. I don't know. Like, to Barberena's credit, he does seem to have come back from the terrible fragility that seemed to marked him, like, went in that Jason Witt fight around the Ivy Witt Brown fights.
Yeah.
Or Weeks too. That Weeks fight was awful.
Yeah. I think what happened is, I mean, Jason Witt does hit hard.
Well,
he's just extremely fragile, but it's not like he isn't a good athlete with speed and power.
Yeah,
I think he just caught Barberena quickly and Barberena never recovered. And then I think in the Weeks fight, he was shook by that because...
Yeah, he also went through some really horrendous health issues. Like,
What was wrong with him?
And Barberena, I want to say it was his liver stopped working, basically. What was it here? He underwent an emergency laparotomy in 2020, a week before he was supposed to fight, due to internal bleeding from a couple ruptured arteries.
Oh shit!
In his omentum, so is around his stomach. And the Witt fight was his first fight back from that.
That might have been part of it too.
Yeah. So he had some real serious health issues. And I will say, He in 2022 on the Brown fights for the maybe the Lawler fight forward. He has looked less like a fighter who is constantly on the verge of getting knocked out.
Yeah.
Than he did over that period. So I'm less worried about that than I was. But he also just still seems to have lost a serious step from that Vicente Luque fight in 2019, where he was clearly Luque and Brown. Those were fights where Barbarena was clearly at his peak, at the very edge of his game, had really solidified up his boxing game as a very aggressive brawler, and just took two really bad knockouts in very competitive fights with far better athletes.
Yeah, fights that were competitive in such a way that it was like Barbarena is constantly landing strikes, but these other dudes are just hitting him really clean and hard.
Yeah.
The entire time. I mean, those are two fights back to back that you would expect to spend a lot of what any fighter sort of has left at that point in their careers.
Yep. And then, so now, you know, he's no longer fragile anymore, but now he's just an old brawler, and the fact that he can't wrestle is continuing to just be a huge issue.
Yeah, and he is in the extremely unfortunate position of being a guy who was already so slow, and now is slowing down more as he ages, that moving up in weight has not made him appear fast.
No.
Like, sometimes you can rejuvenate the sense of speed by going up in weight. Now, RDA, Nelson, and Muradov all look significantly faster than him.
Yep. And Mearshart won't.
Yep.
But Mearshart is a dude where if you are not a really great athlete, or if you're not significantly faster than him, then he will just go out and put a really consistent grind on you until you fold up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like he did with Mahmoud Muradov in a way that Barbarena absolutely couldn't.
You're going to be super slow and plodding and not as high output as you used to be either.
Yeah.
The fact that Mearshart has 5.5 inches of reach.
Yep.
And 1 inch of height on you. Like, Mearshart can probably jab Barbarena up in this match.
Yeah, Mearshart's his boxing has actually come a really long way.
Yeah, at least offensively. Defense, yeah, he just leans back. But
well, he's just not fast, and he never will be. Like that. Well,
even so, there's his defensive technique leaves something to be desired as well.
But
he's going to have a huge reach advantage as a guy who has been at this weight for his entire career.
And yep. And he just knows how to put together a multi-round grind where if he's not at a severe speed disadvantage, Mearshart will fight a pretty good fight.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I got to go with Gerald Mearshart.
Yep. It looks like a fight where Mearshart can probably box Barbarena up a bit just because of the size. And if at any point he can complete a takedown, it looks like Barbarena is in serious trouble.
Yep.
So I just don't like it for Barbarena.
Nope. Mearshart opened at -182. He's currently -233. Barbarena opened at +163. Currently +203.
To access the bonus content of this show, you must be a paid subscriber.